She'll say something to start with.
Today is April 11th, 1978. My name is Patty Wagner, and today I am interviewing Mrs. Fanny Gazzara. She resides on 311 Locust Street, Hamilton, New Jersey. Social Security number 14805-8122. Mrs. Gazzara, would you like to tell me how you and your husband got involved in the meat market?
Well, to be honest, he was told by the doctor to leave the factory on account of his ill health. And the best thing for him to do was to get out and seek work that's like outside work, something different. Mm-hmm. Well, being that ever since he was a child, he was always interested in livestock, because we used to have a butcher down at the end of our street that used to slaughter now and mm-hmm. then a little calf or something, you know. Mm-hmm. He would always be down there watching him, and he was always so interested. Mm-hmm. So the only thing that came to his mind was that he probably wanted to get into the meat business, which he didn't know a thing about. Mm-hmm. So he started out by working for a fellow by the name of Jimmy Maliotti in A Harbor. He used to have a butcher shop there. And he didn't know a pork chop from a sirloin steak or anything. Mm-hmm. So anyway, he got some of his experience there. So when he thought he was ready, he thought he would start out in business for himself. Well, he bought the second-hand panel truck, built a little cutting board back there, a little scale, and a small handmade ice box, and bought his first piece of meat from Cutter Hay Packing Company mm-hmm. in Atlantic City. Mm-hmm. Well, we would grind up the hamburger at home. By that time, we had already set up our garage as a little retail store, and we had a second-handed grinder. And we would grind up all the hamburger for him and set it up in this little truck. And he would go from door to door peddling, you know. Mm-hmm. Of course, he started out on a small scale. Mm-hmm. Well, the first couple of weeks to me seemed like a disaster. I told myself, we ought to give up. I was, you know, just uh-huh. all upset about this. He said, no, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep on going. He said, after all, I mean, maybe you make it 1 week, next week you lose, so that's the way business goes. So he did that for a couple of years, peddled from door to door, and little by little he picked up like little bars and other little places of business. While we at home, we did all the preparing of the sausage, mm-hmm. which was stuffed by hand.
Mm-hmm. You processed the meat yourself?
Well, the sausage, you know, it's not processed, it's all fresh. So you grind it up, season it, you know. Well, we had my brother-in-law doing most of the heavy work, and I would help him whenever I could, mm-hmm. running in and out of the house all the time. Mm-hmm. And we sold quite a bit of sausage. Mm-hmm. And then later on, we had a chance to buy this kettle from two old ladies. I can't remember their names, mm-hmm. but they were making scrapple and selling it to different ones. I don't know who they were selling it to, but anyway, they wanted to give it up, and we knew about it. Mm-hmm. So we bought this big kettle, mm-hmm. and it was it was really old-fashioned. It had like a wood box right underneath the kettle.
Yeah.
And you had to light the fire with wood to heat up the water in this mm-hmm. kettle, and we made our scrapple. Mm-hmm. Of course, they gave us the recipe, too. They sold us the recipe with the stove and everything. Mm-hmm. But everything was done by hand. All the meat had to be ground by hand, boned by hand, and we used this paddle, and we used to pack in little tins. Mm-hmm. And at that time, my husband thought it was no more than right to name it Fanny's Homemade Scrapple, which we sold quite a bit. So it was really a struggle, but little by little, we were getting more customers. The people would come in our little retail, you know, store at the garage on. We were living on Jacob Street at the time, 210 Jacob Street. Mm-hmm. So little by little, he felt that he was ready to build his slaughterhouse. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until about 1942 when he built his first slaughterhouse. Mm-hmm. And we had a retail store with that mm-hmm. building. Mm-hmm. But we didn't start making the hot dogs until about, I'd say, maybe the following year, when we hired this fellow by the name of Max Jeske. He was a German from Cologne, mm-hmm. and he had most of the recipes. Mm-hmm. like for hot dogs, and he started making some more of the German cuts, like, I just can't remember them all now, like some kind of different sausages and kielbasa, and I forgot the names of some of the things that he used to make. Well, little by little, you know, the business got better and better. Then he started putting trucks on the road. We start wholesaling. You know, it all came gradually. So when he realized that he needed more room, he expanded his slaughterhouse. But at first, everything was manual, like the pulleys to pull up the calves, pull up the
how many
pigs.
How many animals they all are slaughtered by? Do you know exactly how many slaughtered?
By hand. Yeah, all by hand. They used to, well, you know, they stick the pigs, then they hang them. But everything had to be done all with hand pulleys, you know, nothing automatic. Then they have like a big, it wasn't exactly a barrel, like a big thing with hot water where they just dip the pig in there. It has to be done that way. And then all the scraping was done by hand. They scrape all the hair off the pig, all by hand. It was all done by hand. The pulleys that would lift up the cattle was all done by hand. There was nothing automatic in the beginning. But when he expanded, then it was altogether different. We had a beautiful tile slaughterhouse. We were noted as having one of the cleanest slaughterhouses in South Jersey. In fact, it was the largest slaughterhouse in South Jersey, too. Well, by that time, you know, everything was automatic, the hoist, and we had the scalding machine for the pigs. And, naturally, in the beginning, we only had a few employees, mostly family, but then we got as high as maybe by about 35 employees by the time we reached the peak. So as I say, we started gradually and finally expanded, the kitchen expanded. After this here fellow Max Jeske left, we had another foreman, a kitchen foreman, and he introduced a few more recipes of his own. And our last foreman was Joe Olivo, a boy from Hamilton, which I think you probably know. And he was there at the highest peak, and he stayed with us till it was time for us to close down. Well, I'll tell you. Well, going back to the beginning of my story, this all started out in 1938. Mm-hmm. And just previous to that, my husband was working at one of the factories in Philadelphia.
Yeah, what were some of the products that you made in the store?
Well, one of our main products was Frankfurters. The first one was made was right on my husband's birthday, April the 12th. I don't remember exactly the year, but we made as high anywhere from 5 to 7,000 pounds a week. That's at the peak season. And the Italian sausage, I would say, from 3 to 5,000 pounds a week, plus all other items, Italian products, such as we even had Polish sausage, beef bologna, which we sold an enormous amount, veal loaves, pimento loaves, vegetable loaf, lunch rolls, Scotch ham, boiled ham, Italian ham, cooked salami, crudichina, liverwurst, capicola, pepperoni, Genoa salami. Of course, scrapple was another big item for us, too. And there's so many others that I just can't mention right now. There's loads of them. And we were also big in rendering lard. We rendered all our lard. We had these great big steam kettles for our lard.
Excuse me, could you mention some of the prices of the meat sold in the past?
Well, are you referring to mostly the fresh meats right now?
Yes.
Well, as of April the 2nd, 1953, we were selling steaks at 78 cents a pound, a choice veal cutlet at $1.20 a pound, chops 75 cents a pound, leg of lamb 65 cents a pound, and loin chops at 98 cents a pound. Fort Lawrence Center, 70 cents, plus a number of other items. But our cold cuts were really very reasonable. We had boiled ham that we were selling at 30 cents a quarter a pound. And if people would buy it in a piece, you know, sometimes large families, they would come and buy a whole bologna. Mm-hmm. We would sell as cheap as 30 cents a pound. Mm-hmm. And that was another big item that also forgot to mention bacon as one of our biggest items. We made thousands of pounds of bacon. That was another good item. And we would sell that. Now, people would buy a whole slab of bacon. A lot of people would want to take it home and slice it themselves.
Uh-huh.
Well, they could buy that as cheap as maybe 25 cents a pound. And even sliced, it would only be a few pennies more. You couldn't get it anywhere for that price. In fact, we were making frankfurters for other people under their own labels.
Mm-hmm. Who bought most of the meat products? Was it mainly people in Hamilton, or?
Well, we retailed and wholesale from Trenton clear down to the Cape.
Mm-hmm.
Wholesale.
Mm-hmm.
That included fresh meats and all the meat products that we processed. The veal, lamb, and pork.
Mm-hmm. Did your husband transport any meat with his trucks?
Well, he picked up most of his cattle with our big cattle truck. In the beginning, it was really hard.
Mm-hmm.
He had to go out with this second-hand cattle truck and buy and bring the livestock home himself. And they were the hard times when there was times that he never even got a chance to go to bed. Maybe he'd stop along the road for an hour or two, the cattle, go right into the slaughterhouse and start right on working.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes he never even came to bed.
Mm-hmm. What type of cattle did he buy?
Well, no, it wasn't always the same. See, we used to buy commercial cattle. That was for processing. We used,
mm-hmm.
You didn't have to use the top quality beef for the kitchen for processing. We used commercial cattle.
Mm-hmm.
But we had top grade for our retail store, and for the stores that we wholesale to.
Mm-hmm. Did you mention where the cattle came from?
Well, we bought a cow as far as Virginia. We used to go to Virginia, Dover, Delaware, Salina, Maryland, Lancaster, and to some of these local markets that we had around here, like Cowtown and up in Columbus. They used to have a big livestock market there years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And at one time, we had a load of cattle shipped by rail from Lancaster.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was the only time in Hamilton that they ever had cattle shipped by rail to Hamilton.
Mm-hmm. Just to ask me what the slaughterhouse was equipped with.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as I can remember, we had two large smoke rooms, a large steam room, and a big rendering a kettle, and then we had a chill room where the cattle had to be chilled with before it went to the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
See, after it was slaughtered,
mm-hmm.
it had to be chilled first and gradually put into the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
Then, besides that, we had another big refrigerator where we stored all our other, like hot dogs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, the big deep freeze also.
Mm-hmm.
We had that also.
After the animals were slaughtered, was the room cleaned out every time it was slaughtered?
Oh, every time they slaughtered, their room was all scrubbed down.
Mm-hmm.
The walls were all tiled. They were all washed. And,
mm-hmm.
Anybody was allowed to go in for inspection. In fact, they used to run inspection every so often. We never knew when they were going to come. And incidentally, the meat was all government inspected, which I forgot to mention.
Right.
Yes. Oh, we always had inspectors coming in, and we never knew, so the place was clean at all times.
During the war, there was a shortage of meat. What was it like for your husband's meat business?
Well, it got pretty rough. We were lucky because the quota was based on the amount of cattle and, you know, that we were slaughtered, so we were a little more fortunate than some of the others. But even at that, the quota was so low that we couldn't accommodate all the people. Because they can only buy whatever stamps was issued to them.
Right.
And people were even begging. They were willing to pay even twice the amount, providing we would give it to them. But we told them we couldn't do it,
right,
because we had to have stamps to buy our meat, so how could we sell it without the stamps?
Right.
So they were really some pretty rough times.
Yeah.
But we tried our best to accommodate our customers.
Sarah, why did your husband's business close?
Well, if I remember correctly, it started sometime around 1952. That's when the people, the employees, were approached by the union trying to organize the place, and they wanted them to go out on strike, which they did.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that upset my husband very much.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't see why they had to join a union when he had everything to offer them.
Mm-hmm.
That they were already, they were already getting all the benefits that the
right.
union had to offer them.
Uh-huh.
And he couldn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
He said he would rather close
mm-hmm.
than have them join the union. He didn't want to have anything to do with it.
Uh-huh.
And that's where it really started.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't long after that when my husband had his first heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
Then a year later, he had another one.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally, not being with the business like he should have been, it started going downhill a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, by 1955, he had his last fatal heart attack, and that's when he died.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my son at that time was only 21, the oldest boy, and he tried to take over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he tried his best. He didn't have the knowledge that his father had. He didn't have enough time to really learn all the ropes of the business. So he tried to carry on for about a year and a half or so. Then we finally were forced to close down. And it was maybe a year or two later that we finally sold it at a loss,
mm-hmm.
a great loss.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What kind of things did your husband do for the community while he was alive?
Oh, well, I just can't begin to mention some of the things he did. First of all, he was always approached by different organizations and different groups and a lot of them even out of town, because we did do a lot of business out of town, and it was always a donation for this or a donation for that, or whether it was money or meat, he never refused anyone, always willing, and they were always very grateful. I don't know whether I should mention this, but at one time he had a horse was known as Sandy the Wonder Horse,
mm-hmm.
and he even took his horse at different places where he displayed the horse for the benefit of the organization. At one time it was the Our Lady of Lourdes Hospital, another time it was the Cooper Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And they were always very grateful. He did that all for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He always liked to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
It was another thing that I thought he did, which I should mention, that he was the first man to ever play Santa Claus in this town.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it for two consecutive years. Then he finally had to give it up because he wasn't getting the right support from the merchants.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
He will always be remembered as the first Santa Claus of Hamilton, distributing candy to the children and driving through town in his red sleigh, drawn by Little King, brother of Trigger, of Roy Rogers fame. He and his horse, Sandy.
Sarah, can you tell me something about your husband's past family history?
Well, I do know that they both came from Midland, where they were born, and they...
These his parents?
These are my husband's parents,
uh-huh.
yes. Catherine and Pasquale Gazzara.
Uh-huh.
And they came straight to Hamilton,
uh-huh.
where they lived most of their life. And, he worked at the railroad at that time. I believe they were getting something like a dollar a day,
mm-hmm.
or very minimal wages. Later, he purchased a small farm, and he farmed at a small scale, which half the time didn't bring enough money to pay for the bills that were made during the winter months. Then he finally got a job with his son, my husband, mm-hmm. and that's where he worked until the time of his death.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How about your husband? Did he have brothers and sisters?
Oh, yes. They were 7 children altogether. Mm-hmm. My husband, Frank, being the oldest. Mm-hmm. And next came my brother, Leon. Another brother, Angelo. Mm-hmm. Joseph. Mm-hmm. A sister, Catherine. Then there was another boy, Peter, mm-hmm. and Mary. Mm-hmm. Did I mention Joseph? Did I say 7?
Mm-hmm.
I should have wrote them all down because I could forget.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. How about your side of family?
Well, my side of family, my parents also came from Italy, but we lived in Philadelphia up in. Till about 1920, that's when we moved here to Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
I was 11 years old at that day. In fact, we moved right on my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
My father was a tailor, and he had gotten a job here with Eskins.
Mm-hmm.
They had a big clothing factory here at the time. And we were 10 children in the family. My sister Grace, the oldest, and then I came next, my brother Carmen.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had another sister, Sally, that was killed a good many years ago at the age of 20.
Mm-hmm.
And then Thomas, Charles, Lucy, Angie, and Irene.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and how about your own family name today?
Well, I have 4 children. My oldest boy, his name is Charles. Most of them call him Buddy as well. He's better known as Bud.
Mm-hmm.
I have 1 daughter, Angela, another son, Carl, and my youngest boy, Frank.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how about grandchildren?
I have 12 grandchildren.
Can you say all the names?
Well, I'll start with the oldest one. His name is Francis. After his grandfather, and he's known as Butch, and he got that name from his grandfather somehow. And then there's a brother. He has a brother with the name of Robert and a sister by the name of Nancy. Now, they're all Buddy's children, my oldest boy. Then my daughter comes next. She has 6 children. Her oldest boy is Stephen, and there's Frank, Kathy, Christine, Stephanie, and Beth Ann. And my third child, his name is Carl. He lives in Medford. He has 3 children. His oldest one is Michelle. They have 1 boy, his name is Michael, and another girl, Carla. My youngest boy lives in Medford, but as of now, they have no children.
Mm-hmm.